Fernando Lozano. I am interviewing Mrs. G.R. Drury. Mrs. Drury was born in Cameron County on February 18, 1887, and has lived in Bishop, Texas since 1911. Mrs. Drury was a librarian for 30 years in Bishop, Texas. Mrs. Drury is now 86 years old and lives happily with her daughter, Mrs. J.C. Whitten. Could you tell us a little bit about your early experiences here in Bishop, Texas?
I'm Mrs. G.R. Drury, and I came to the thriving little town of Bishop in November of 1911 with my small son to join my husband, G.R. Drury, who had come ahead to get established in the mercantile business of E.A. Flynn. At that time, the town was being was small, and F.D. Bishop was putting the land. He was here with large steam plows and breaking up this soil and selling it to people who would come here. The town was small, and we found that there were no houses for rent. So we had to stay at the Bishop Hotel for about 3 weeks. At that time, the Bishop Hotel was considered the showcase of South Texas, and I well remember the Thanksgiving dinner that I ate there. The table was set in beautiful damask and sterling silver, and sparkling cut glass, and the conversation piece of the table was a whole roast pig with an apple in its mouth.
What year did you come to Bishop, Texas? What year was it when you came to Bishop, Texas?
In 1911, didn't I say? 1911. Well, I should have said November 1911.
You did.
I came to Bishop in November of 1911. Did I say the mercantile business was in the name of E.A. Flynn at that time? But in 1916, there was a change in ownership, and it was made, the sign was changed to G.R. Drury. So I lived in the heyday of Bishop, but I saw several hurricanes and droughts. Went through the Depression and survived it all to this day.
What were some of the effects of the Depression? How did it affect Bishop at that time?
Well, that was about the time I should have started college, and I didn't go to college. And instead, I went to work, and it was certainly a sacrifice for parents whose children who did get to go because of the Depression. And I know that I went to work in a drugstore that our neighbors were the owner, Mr. Howard, was the druggist. And that was the drugstore that was the conversation piece of this part of the country in its early days because of the beautiful marble and the mirrors that surrounded it and the mounted wildlife that was shown on the walls. And of course, that wasn't so much really when I was working there. That was in really the early days that when the drugstore was as pretty as it was. And I was born in Bishop, and my mother was a widow at the time I married, and I continued to live in the same house that I was born in, and my children were reared in until a few years ago, which is really unusual for anyone to stay in a home that long. And the house is still here, and it's been through quite a few hurricanes. And
can you remember anything about the hurricanes, Mrs. Lewis?
Yes, I will remember the first one was in August the 18th of 1916. And my husband and some friends decided that we'd go to the Bishop Hotel for safety, because we were afraid maybe that our home might be blown off the blocks. So we all locked arms, and the wind was blowing, oh, terrible. And we went to the Bishop Hotel and spent the night. And I well remember my husband lay down and just went to sleep. And I couldn't understand, because the store which we owned, the top of it was all in, and oh, everything was badly damaged, but he just went right on through. It didn't seem to, oh, I'm sure it bothered him, but I mean, he just lay down and went to sleep till the next morning. And then that was the first storm. Then there was one in 1919. And then there was...
Well, I remember the 1919, I think, because we again locked arms and the neighbors, and we went up to the school, which was about three blocks from our home. And at that time, there was a three-story school building there. And the restrooms for the boys and the girls were little brick buildings away from the school structure, and that's, we all went to the restrooms to for shelter. And I remember how the wind was blowing then for us to get up there. Also, the school had the first, second, and third grades, I believe, in a basement, and I can remember they were kind of dark and dingy, and I'm sure damp. And the auditorium was in the top floor, and I can remember us trudging up to every time we had anything, and which was used to, we had more programs, I think, in the auditorium. And also the community had a lot of programs. We had Chautauquas and one-act plays, and some of the organizations were always putting on something. With the men would maybe have womanless, and I can remember us all, we were always there, I think, when they had a program. And
Mr. Whitman, how long have you lived here? In
moved here in 28.
28? What can you remember of some of the early things in Bishop, like the first Mr. Bishop and some of the...
Well, I didn't know Mr. Bishop. You didn't know any of them. They were, when I came here, we moved into a farm out here north of Bishop. Only thing I remember back in those olden days is we had mules. That back in, we had 28 mules I had to feed every day, and I mean every morning and night. And we used two little cultivators and one little sucky plow to plow. Now they have these modern day tractors. And we had our own cows and chickens. And we had 10 milk cows that we milked every day and every night. My mother sold milk and butter and eggs in Corpus Christi. And we'd get up and we had these old hand churns where nowadays you got this modern thing. We had this old 5 gallon bag of churn that we sipped myself with the churn milk twice a week to make butter to, where we could sell on the weekends.
How was transportation like in those days?
Back in those days, when I came to see my wife and stuff like that, I rode a horseback down 3 miles town. And if I could catch a ride back home, well, I'd take the bridle off the horse, hanging on the saddle horn, and turn the horse loose, and she would go 3 miles north down the country road to the house. My daddy knew when the horse came into the house with the bridle tied on the saddle horn that I had a ride home. He said, the bridle on the saddle horn where he wouldn't lose and get caught in there. And that was our modern transportation. Back in those days, we lived a mile off the highway on dirt road. And many a time when they had these high water and rain, we'd take the front end of the wagon and put two mules on it. And my dad would pick up my sister and myself and three other boys, and he'd carry up the highway. And we met a boy up there with an open air bush that had had side curtains on it made out of canvas and beans right along the edge. That's what we said. That's when we came to school in. And then when we got some money, we couldn't go up there to the highway. We walked that mile. And then in the afternoon when we would say we were playing football or something like that, we'd walk on. We didn't have any transportation like the children do now. They carry up the door, you know.
Yeah.
And we'd practice football late in the afternoon, and we'd walk on. We still had all our chores, feeding the horses and milking the cow and everything after we got home.
Was there a lot of time for socials in those days, or was it just busy work? That's what I understood.
No. We had most time on our social. We had it on Sunday afternoon. We'd all out in the area where I lived. I lived out north of town here, 3 miles, and they used to have the Concord community out there, and we'd all meet over at Mr. Mayhawk's house there. And on Sunday afternoon, we'd ride horses out there, and it'd be maybe 15 to 25 boys and girls, Latins and Negroes and all. We'd be playing baseball because all our family knew where we were on Sunday afternoon. Then if we came to town maybe once to the show or something like that on Saturday afternoon, something like that, well, that was a big thrill to us back in those days. And then we were drawing a dollar a day back in those days when we was working on the farm, and that was, you worked, get up in the morning about 4 or 5 o'clock, and you worked till after the sun went out. And that was a dollar a day, that was big money back in those days. But you could go in town and spend a dollar, and you could have a big time, where nowadays it costs you $15 or $20 to have a good time.
This is Louis. Do you remember the early schools and the churches?
Oh yes, when I came, there were no churches, and we had services upstairs over one of the buildings here in town, and of course the churches were soon under construction, but they weren't completed for years after that. But I went to church, and I went to the Missionary Society. In fact, I'm a charter member of the WSCS, that was the local. And I'm the oldest living member in the Methodist Church. And I'm a charter member of the King's Daughter Sunday School class. A charter member of the Eastern Star. And so I had plenty of, that was my social work. I mean, I didn't play bridge or anything like that. I found enough time with my family and my church and club activities that kept me busy. And, I enjoyed all of it. And,
what can you remember of the first schools? How was schools like in those days, the teachers and all?
Well, I don't, of course, I can't speak for the for the first days, but teachers were sort of held up like preachers, I would say. Mm-hmm. Teachers were looked up to, and they just didn't think about smoking or drinking. Mm-hmm. And most of them taught Sunday school class, or they were expected to be in their respective churches on Sunday morning. And if they did any of those things, they did it on the sly, because I think they were, teachers were sort of on a pedestal, in my estimation, more so than I think they are today. And I can also remember, I think it rained more, or we thought it did, and we had deep ditches in front of all the streets, ran in front of our homes, and the ditches would get so full that the boys or children could float a canoe, then we used to enjoy our park. They had a bandstand there, and that would have band concerts, and I'm sure there was a picnic to go. Yeah, the lake. In fact, I'm sure that's where my brother learned to swim. Mother thought he needed to learn to swim on dry land, so somebody just took him out and threw him out, and he had to sink or swim, so he learned how to swim.
So there was a lot of celebrations and feasts.
Yes, uh-huh.
Back in those days too, you went back that old, what's called a leather strap and the yard, the root. For discipline back in those days, too, instead of like it is modern day to now. Well, I remember what we used to have one teacher, Miss Smith Robbins, there. If you got in trouble in her class, she would take your hand and catch it, look like this, and bend back and paddle you right in the palm of your hand with the ruler. And you remember when she got through with it, too.
How was the medical practice in those days, Miss Gurry?
Well, we've always.
Medicine and so forth. Was a lot of this done by doctors? Or?
Yes, we always had a doctor. I was trying to think of the person.
Dr. William. Yeah.
No, somebody else before him.
Well, we've just been fortunate that we've always had from one to two, and I don't know whether we've ever had three or not at one time.
Yes, we've always
had
a doctor. But,
was any medicine practice at home? Folk medicine, you know?
Yeah.
Like they do now, you know, they got herbs and all those things.
I'm sure there were, and we didn't know too much about it, but I feel sure that, in fact, I used to work in the drugstore, and I know we sold a lot of herbs.
Well, back in those days, too, you get the croup, they'd give you kerosene and sugar. And then if you get a ride in what we call a boil nowadays, you get you a fat piece of slab of bacon put on top of it and draw it out to a head. And it's from Dairyvine League, they'd mash it up and put it on a boil like that. And what's called mustard plaster? Mustard plaster, that wintergreen salve for chest cold and everything back in those days. And the kerosene was the main remedy for, you stick a nail or something in your foot, well, you'd go run and grab the kerosene can, because most people had kerosene lamps and stoves in those days, in the earlier days. And that was one of your main, number one medicine back in that day for a cut or a sore based on it.
Oh, I used to think if I ever had children, they'd never have castor oil. Or iodine, and what else? And I never did give it to any of mine.
Is there any legends or superstitions or folk music that you can remember?
No, I don't remember anything.
Do you remember, Mr. Miss Smith, or Miss, do you remember A mother lame?
Yes,
I do very well.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about her? That I've had some people tell me.
She came. I forget where she was from, but I had a filling station back there when she was here. And there's people from all over the United States, including Mexico and everywhere else, came to see her. She has, now, what she used, I couldn't say. But I have seen some wonderful things she did. Because now, what it was, you know, your this faith in or something, because one day there was a man came in there, and he had a big knot up on that side of his nose. He stayed here 2 weeks, and when he left here, that knot was completely gone. He'd had it all his life. Now, what she used, I can't say. But she was a, I don't know what you call her, a faith healer or what it was. But she had people from all over the United States, there, everywhere else came here.
I've forgotten what year that was, but I can remember.
Well, you know, I don't know when it came, but you know, I had a station in 51, and she was here a long time before then. She was here a long time.
I thought she was rocking.
Well, she was, but I mean, like I say, but what she used, nobody knew.
Just a
hands, okay. It was, whatever she did, she healed a lot of people.
But in the way of transportation, when we came, we didn't have good roads like there are now. And we did most of our travel by train.
That's right.
From here to Corpus to do your shopping. And it was just a day off and a lark to go to Corpus for a day's shopping. Because we didn't have cars then like we do now. Of course, Mr. Bishop, who was putting the land in, of course, he had his car, and then his land men that were with him, they had theirs. But we didn't have cars like we do now, and the roads. And it seemed to me like it rained. I just seemed to, it did nothing but rain, and the roads were rough and. Well, we just didn't have much way of getting around except to go by train.
But you knew Mr. Bishop pretty well?
I didn't know him to say personally, I mean, because he was in and out, and he built two homes here. And, yes, I saw him, and I mean, I wasn't in his, I wasn't intimate with him, I mean, but I, but.
Well, didn't you know his wife?
Oh, yes, I knew his wife real well. I mean, I knew his wife, but then I didn't know him.
You mentioned some of the races, you know, that existed at those times. I understand there was a lot of German people also in this community.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of
German.
They had a settlement out here northwest, northeast of Bishop, what's called the Concordia. They had a school and a church. And then they had their own school, and they had big picnic grounds. They'd have what they call their annual picnic every year. People in Bishop look forward to the what they call the Concordia picnic every year. I think it was held in the latter part of May or June.
I think so.
In other words, just be a family gathering. In other words, they'd have the big barbecues and everything. Everybody would look forward to that every year. They'd go out here to Concordia District and have a big grove out there and everything. And just a general get together of all the people in this surrounding area here.
I understand there was also some racial feelings after the war. The Ku Klux Klan existed at that time, didn't it?
Not very strongly.
Not very strongly?
Not here.
Not here. In some areas after the war, you know,
they had tried to organize in Corpus, but right around here, if it did, it was on the QT. I don't remember it here because after I come back out of services, everybody around here got along pretty well.
Pretty well.
As far as I know.
Were there any anti-Mexican feelings that time? Discrimination, of course, those things have existed to some extent in all races, you know.
But as long as I've been here, I've never known it.
we've just been fortunate in our little town that
it's been
no strong
political
feelings.
So it seemed like the Negroes and the Mexican people and the white all got along real good. You never see any fights among, you know, the boys or anything like that. It seemed like everybody got along real well together.
We had, there was a Latin American school, but when they integrated, I don't know, it just all fell right into, there was no trouble, never any friction.
White children went across over to school over there, and then some of the, and then what was up to the fourth grade one, I believe it was, when they had elementary school on that side and over here, you know. And it just seemed like it just went right along real smooth. As far as I know, now we did have, until here recently, the Negroes had a school up to, I don't know, it's quite a few grades they had over there. But at that time, we didn't have very many Negroes in around in here. Most of it was all Latin.
That's good.
Larry,
can you recall anything else of importance?
I don't know. You asked me something, and I'll see if I can answer it. I don't know.
Okay. A little bit about the shopping. Down and understand the people would come to town, you know, and on Saturdays, things like activities that were happening. Can you remember? Like you mentioned, the train traveling and so forth.
Well, we used to have trains that came through here that were on expositions or political campaigns that would come through, and everyone would go down to hear their speeches, and then of course Saturday, I guess, was a big day for everyone to go to town, because you didn't get out and go to other communities like you do now, and everyone went to town, so there was always a crowd. And
back in those early days, the Saturday was, you might say, your only day you had off. Especially around on the farm worker and everything, they had some kind of a chore you had to do during the summertime with the children. They had to help along chop cotton and feed and everything like that. For you, and Saturday was, might say, your big free day, by Saturday and Sunday, back in those younger days of town. But you'd come in, they'd go, people go to, they had a picture show here, then you'd go to the picture show, and they'd look for, might say, the farm people came in most to do the shopping on Saturdays. And it was really a hustle and bustle in town with all the people was in town and everything back in those days.
Well, I don't know, but for me, Saturday, I didn't go to town much. I just did all I had to do during the first part of the week, and I stayed at home on Saturdays.
Well, I can remember us going to town, though, waiting for Daddy to close up.
Yeah.
And
but I mean, I never did just go to town, and I know lots of people that would come in from town, and they'd just sit out in front of the stores and just wait all day, just
watching the
people
going up and down the street, that you can imagine.
Just watching the crowd. But I came up in mid-Victorian days, and my father told me that there was 6 days in the week that I had to do all that I need to be done, and for me to stay off the streets on Saturday. So I came up with that kind of and so I just never was in town very much on Saturday. Even though my husband was in business, I didn't have anything special to do down in town, so I wasn't much of a hand to just go and stay just all day, just watching everybody.
Did y'all get to live, or you lived on during the prohibition days? Was there any regulation, I mean, as far as prohibition here in Bishop, that, you know, like liquor cannot be...
No, it's been dry all the time.
It's been dry all the time?
It's been dry all the time.
And there was no
saloons
or anything like that. Somebody mentioned to me about people fermenting something, kind of a KK drink, like a root beer. Or,
no, they make what you call the old homebrew.
Was that permitted?
Yeah, see, you can make it. We used to have an old nigger boy out there on the farm that every Saturday he'd have these dances, and there'd be niggers come from Corpus and everything like that. And he'd have to take off at lunch on Friday afternoon because of Roscoe was his name, and he had to brew his own homebrew. And he'd get this cake yeast, and he used these old type orange crush bottles, which is not, you don't see them nowadays. And he'd make anywhere from 15 to 20 cases of homebrew. And he would sell every bit of it on Saturday night. That had no big old open house down there where he lived. Just one nigger, old nigger man by himself. And he'd quit the work. He drove mules and everything, my father, all the other week. But Friday, he said, Mr. Whitman said, I've got to go get ready for Saturday night. And he'd make homebrew all Friday afternoon, Friday night, where he'd have it ready for Saturday.
What, they didn't have any content, liquid content?
It was some kind of a water and a malt and yeast cakes and everything like that, and it'd ferment, see.
Oh, yeah.
And then he would strain that off and pour it in these bottles. Now, there we'll get one afternoon down there, or it must have been about 6 o'clock. Now, at the house, I heard something just blowing up, and I thought he had an explosion of gunpowder. And what he had done, he'd put this green homebrew on the west side of the house, and the sun had hit it, you know, and had it fermented. Mm-hmm. Well, it just had regular explosion. He lost all his homebrew and everything that day. But people back in those days, that they like beer and stuff like that, that they, what you call it, homebrew, you know, they'd make it. I don't know what the ingredients were. It was malt and yeast cakes and different.
It's like it wouldn't have had time to.
Well, it's ferment, you know, and then they put it in a bottle and keep it cool, and then they put it on the ice. And that's what they used to drink back in those days.
For like and a refreshing drink.
That's right. Where they get beer nowadays, you know, they make, in every family, mostly, you know, it did drink like that, made your own home in these big old 10-gallon crocks, they kept in these crocks.
Nice.
And,
but it wasn't for selling purposes?
Not just selling purposes only. Well, it's like his nigger. Now, he would sell it on Saturday night to dances, and there wasn't no restriction on it, you know, or something like that. I think he got, a dime a bottle for it.
Can you remember some of the first oil industry here in Bishop when it first started? Do you know, Mr. Whitten, remember? Or?
Well, I guess first it came in here with the Champion Oil Company, I guess, recycling plant. I guess first interest actually the industry, it's gas industry, and they're still here. And then after that, it began to come on, and suddenly it came in here. And back in those, what was it, about 40-something, the Champion came in here and built those. About 40, they came in here and built those plants. That was those recycling plants, what's called gas and recycling plants. That was the first main inductors that was here. And then after that, Selma came in and built a big plant here south of town. But mostly it was gas inductors back in those earlier days.
I understand that the whole town illuminated at first, you know, when they first set up these plants, you know, and after a while it started decreasing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes, this oil industry is what saved Bishop, because at one time we were just barely breathing, and that was about all. Mm-hmm. And then these oil industries sprang up, and especially when Selenes came in. They brought in so many families, and but up until that time, you see, we're so close to Kingsville that there really wasn't too much here for, in the way of businesses. But this oil coming in is what saved our lives for this part of the country, because it just put new blood and new life all together. And, new people came in, so many of them were just
Well, they added so much to the community. They were good workers and our churches and schools and.
Well, they just added to the town. They were. These, of course, the key men, as they call them, they're high men. Just helped to bring our little town back into life again.
How were things after the war when you came back? You said you had served in the war?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in service. World War II.
World War II.
But everything, they didn't already have those plants back in here then when I came here. And I went to work at one of the plants after I came back from the war.
Well, don't you remember one of the things, though, that during the war, the strikers.
Strike, everything.
And how, I think, I guess you were kind of bitter about it because there they were off over there fighting and these people over here striking. And
strike for higher wage and everything. I was overseas during that time when I was having all that trouble.
Was it pretty hard for the people that came back to get jobs?
Not too terrible hard. Yeah, I had a chance to go back with the company I was working with before, but I didn't do it. I went into the oil business back there when I came back out of service. And then I went back in, and after that, and then I went and worked at the promo company out here northwest of town is the recycling plant. Then I've been there ever since. I've been there going on 23 years now. I did one plant.
Well, if you can remember anything else, I think I've asked you just about all the questions, you know, that we have.
Is there anything that I could add that would be of interest or anything?
You mentioned the churches. I understand. A lot of the activities, socials, were surrounded around the church.
That's right.
Like the preacher, you know, on Sundays and so forth. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit more on that?
Well, we've had, well, not only the churches, but we've had other clubs here, the history club. I'm a charter member of the history club. That's it started out as a study club. Mm-hmm. But and we didn't do any outside work. But the last few years, while we've been working to help the cemetery, and then the younger people have a club, and there are two music clubs and
a garden club,
and
we've had a volunteer fire department
since 1912.
Strictly volunteer, no paid member.
Oh, that's right. J.C. was fire chief for how many years?
I think 11. I've been in department 33 years.
Were there any revivals coming to town?
In revivals in the church, you mean?
No, coming to town, you know.
We used to have revival in tents. Then we have tent revivals.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
That's what he wants to know. And what else would come here? The tents. And
we used to have the Chautauquas, as they called them. It was kind of an educational lecture form, and they bring in different people. But
what were they called?
The Chautauqua.
Chautauqua.
It was a, well, more like a, what do they have today in Kingsville? They just bring in a noted people that would talk about things and lecture form and
singers.
and singers.
Like
and,
some of your programs at the college, I guess.
Just people, intellectual, in an intellectual way is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you're speaking about the revivals that maybe the Baptist Church may have one maybe this week or something, and maybe the Methodist. But all the churches would, Mama said, just they would all go to different revivals. In other words, there wasn't anything what you say. Well, if you were Baptist or Methodist, you go. Most all churches kind of participated together in their revivals and everything, and it had one every year and everything like that. A different one, a different church, and everybody on all churches participated in going to them.
Well, I
want to
thank you very much for the interview.
Whether we contributed didn't think very much or not. I just.
Well, did you have any kind of
treatment? You were just in a social way, just.
Can you remember anything all about the tradition?
My father had one of the a small car, like the small, at that time it would be more like one of our smaller cars today. And a group of boys jacked it up, put it up on boxes, and waited around the corner for Daddy to get in the car. Well, when he started to get in, he noticed what had happened, that they had it jacked up. So he got in, and of course, like he was going to start off, and it wouldn't start. So they got further out in the street. They were just having a real good time by then, trying to watch him start off in his little car. And he worked it some way where he got the wheels loose and finally got it off of those boxes, and away he went, and he scattered his onlookers. So that was a little joke of theirs. And can you remember that my father had a mercantile, a grocery store later on. And some lady came in to pay her bill, and yeah. He was waiting on her and asked her what her name was. And wasn't it Ms. Buzzard?
Buzzard.
Buzzard. Well, it struck him so funny that this name, that he just ducked down behind the counter and just scooted out. He just never did wait on the woman. He couldn't wait on her because he was so tickled.
He just couldn't imagine anybody but the name of Buzzard. And when she said her name was Buzzard, why?
It struck him, and he just felt like he couldn't face her again. He was so tickled, I did.
Back in the earlier days, they raised, the farmers would raise radishes and cabbage and carrots and beets and like that for produce people in Robstown. And where that would be the first crop before they planted their feed and their cotton crops. And then what the vegetable stuff didn't sell, it was always harvested themselves and then hauled in feed to the cattle and their hogs and the mules for roughage. But where then that just got where there was no market for it, and then they started going strictly to just entirely cotton and feed. But because the vegetable market fell off and was a demand, because they started to get vegetable all over the area then. But they raised, they would look forward every year to the early vegetable crops, onions and all different vegetables, and sell to produce companies in Robstown.
Was most of the labor by hand?
It was all pulled by hand and cut and tied and boxed in hand. And onions were clipped and sacked, and same way with the beets and everything. They were sacked and hauled into Robstown to the produce houses up there. And then it was rewashed and then re-iced down and put in the refrigerated cart and sent to different markets at Old State.
Were people brought in, or were there local people?
Well, I was a local people, and then they was hands came in from out of the valley. And I know back in the early days when we had when we our cotton picking, we all of our hands came from around Grand City. And my father would buy as many as 100 cards of wood every year from a man down there, Carter, where the hands would have for their cooking purposes. They'd use wood stove back in those days. And we'd just break that wood up along the fence there, along the pasture, and we'd buy around 100 cards of wood every year for a cotton picking.
Were there Mexican people, Latin American, blacks, or?
They were Latin American people and Negroes from up around Fort Worth that came down every year. It was the same hands we had that would come every year. My father would depend on every year, and they handpicked all the cotton. And we hauled the cotton to the gin with mule and wagon, three-bale wagons, back in those days. And then we had, back there then, we had four gins here. And one crew would work till early morning till late at night. And we were drawing about, I think, 50 cents an hour working in the gin back in those days. And that was big money back there.